ABC Radio Australia.
We're going to switch to sport now, where a new era is on the horizon for soccer in Oceania, with the eight-team OFC Pro League set to kick off in January next year. Alongside Auckland FC and Christchurch United from New Zealand and Australia's South Melbourne, there will be five Pacific Island teams, and four of them will be brand new franchises. Vanuatu FC, Bulla Boys FC from Fiji, Solomon Kings FC and Tahiti United will join the only established club, PNG's Hakata United, in the new competition. Solomon Islands' most capped international player, Henry Fa'arodo, is now director of his country's youth academy, and he can't wait for the Pro League to get started.
One of the criteria for the Pro Club is they have to have an academy, and I think that would be awesome. And yeah, I think for me, that's a big step in football. I think, to have a professional club here in the country is a great step for us, and especially, for the young boys coming up, I think they'll be in a great opportunity to step into that professional level as well.
However, not everyone is thrilled, particularly those that missed out, such as New Zealand and Oceania's longest-standing professional club, the Wellington Phoenix. They were pinning their hopes on a place in the new competition to open up a pathway to the FIFA Club World Cup. And their general manager, David Dome, says they are prepared to take their case to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, if necessary, after their licence application was rejected.
We've stated from the start, and I've raised it with people in FIFA and obviously for many years, is where is the pathway for the Wellington Phoenix to get things like Champions League and Club World Cup? And we've been shifted from pillar to post, and inevitably OFC have said, well, look, OFC Pro League is coming, that's going to be the channel. So after all of this time and all of this investment to then be kneecapped at the last minute was heartbreaking. All we're asking for is the process. And all we're saying is, can we have some transparency, please, as to how these decisions were made?
Yeah, there's a lot happening indeed. And to find out more about it, we're joined by the competition manager for the new OFC Pro League, Stuart Larman. Stuart, thank you for joining us on Pacific Beat this morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
No, not a problem at all. Now, obviously, we just heard from the Wellington Phoenix general manager, David Dome, there. I understand it was a pretty lengthy and complicated application process by the sounds of it. How did you go about selecting the teams, and what was the criteria to ensure both stability and broad representation of the Pacific?
Yeah, sure. So trying to put this into a short summary, because as you say, it is quite a lengthy process that we went through, a very detailed process we went through. The final part of the process, once we got down to the final 12 clubs, was to require the clubs to meet all the club licensing requirements, the minimum requirements through a range of criteria in a range of areas, including sporting, infrastructure, financed personnel, legal and social responsibility and marketing. And once we had the situation where there was more than one club who had applied and had met the minimum requirements for club licensing, we delved deeper into the documents that we received. We received over 150 documents from each of the clubs during this process. And we delved deeper to get a fairer, a much clearer understanding of the exact in and outs at each of the clubs. And we had a maturity matrix, which was designed to help us to understand the level of progression, the level of readiness, the actual ins and outs of the club in terms of what we're expecting from our professional clubs that are playing in the OFC Professional League. And we gave each of the submissions a score based on that. It was linked to each of the documents that were submitted. So based on that, then when there were more than one club applying from a country that had met the minimum requirements, we did this assessment, and that assessment enabled us to determine who was ranked higher through the matrix, and that was how the final ranking was determined and put forward to the relevant bodies.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear how it all sort of take us by the behind the curtain to hear how that all works. I've got to say, I've always wondered that myself. That being said, I'm sure Mr. Dome or the Wellington Phoenix probably wouldn't love to hear that. Will you give them an explanation as to what disqualified them with that matrix?
Well, obviously we can't really comment on specific cases. But we're giving all of the clubs feedback on their submissions so that they can take that information and move forward, both with their own planning immediately, but also with a long-term view to our expansion in the future and how these different clubs might come back into the fold later on.
So four new Pacific-based teams have been created for this competition. Why did you want to create new clubs as opposed to elevating existing clubs such as, a Fira Blackbirds and teams like that?
Well, it wasn't our choice to determine what the structure and the format of the clubs was. The clubs who applied were able to put the submissions together as they wished. So if you look at those who are involved in all of the clubs, there's obviously a lot of football background behind all of the clubs that applied. It's just that as this is the first time we've had professional football, I think that many people thought about the need to create a new separate entity, which was purely focused on professional football. But if you look at, like I say, if you look at the people who are actually involved, obviously they're people who have got long football backgrounds in the region and in those specific countries.
Were you excited to hear that you know that these organisations wanted to create brand new clubs, or did that put a bit of fear in you, in the sense that it's obviously going to be a huge operation to set up in such a short time frame?
Well, there was no fear, but the I was actually impressed by the fact that when we first put out the open up the expression of interest, there were 24 clubs that had applied. Obviously, we had a filtering phase, which we required various minimum items and minimum requirements to be met by the different clubs, and that got us down to the final 12. And we always knew that we were restricted to the 8 clubs. I think everyone's aware that we are contributing to the overall cost of the delivery of the competition, but also for some of the costs that the club is going to incur in terms of their travel and accommodation. And of course, there's a limit to the funds, and that means that we're restricted to 8 clubs. So that was, it would have been amazing to have been able to include all of the clubs, but for now, we're at this point where we have to go over the 8. So it was really, like I say, if we go look back to the 24 initially applied, it was really surprising for me, but also exciting that there was that level of interest.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. Look, I mean, we've done a lot of reporting on the NRL PNG team in the last couple of years. So, I know what goes into creating a professional club, and it's certainly a long and complex process. Can you guarantee that these new 4 clubs who are going to be based in Pacific Islands can survive long term in a professional environment?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously this is the key element to us. When it's all clubs, we need to look at the sustainability of all clubs. I think that that's obviously a global issue in football in general. I mean, we've seen in different countries that things are happening on a daily basis for specific clubs. So, I mean, what we did in the process as part of the assessment, we requested all the clubs to provide us with clarity on how they were funding the club, and to provide written evidence as documentation to prove that funding is available. So that's, of course, the immediate issue or the immediate concerns addressed. And long term, we obviously have a program planned to support all of the clubs in terms of how they structure themselves on the commercial side. And of course, we've got the support we're providing centrally in terms of, like I said, the flights, accommodation, and some of the other major costs that the clubs might have. And of course, there'll be some kind of distribution, if you want to call it prize money, that we'll also support the clubs with in the future as we grow as a league as well. But the core element is that we need to work with the clubs on the commercial side to make sure that they really leverage all avenues of revenue and maximize the income they can generate.
What about in terms of the grassroots side, like pathways, academy programs, things like that, to ensure they've always got players coming through? I know things like that can be quite costly. Do they have guaranteed funding for elements like that?
So at the moment, in terms of the requirements, we require the clubs to have youth teams, and we expect that they will play in national competitions. As you pointed out yourself, that most of these clubs are the only professional club in the country. They obviously have that natural peak of the pyramid position, and obviously the federations and the existing clubs that exist in those countries have created structures that will filter into those clubs. At this point in time, we're not insisting that the clubs go much further than that, because obviously the structures already exist through the federations. But as we develop, I think as we progress, we will expect more and more from the clubs on this front, because I think everyone knows how it works in football, that one of the key revenue streams that might come from this for all of the clubs is the transfer market. So there needs to be that focus on how players are being developed, going through the process of joining those professional clubs, getting the experience and proving themselves on the OFC Professional League stage before they then move on to to other things and obviously generate income for those clubs. So yeah, longer term, we have to be orientated towards that. So that's 100% one of the key areas.
So in the short term, because I imagine there's going to be some teething issues, in the first couple of seasons or so, do you think they're going to be able to compete, with teams from Australia and New Zealand, most of which are really storied clubs, even, teams like South Melbourne have a long history and Christchurch as well.
I think the way I'm looking at it is that, obviously, as I said, that these are the only professional clubs in their specific countries. So they've got the selection of all the best players in those countries to sign them up as professional players. I'm sure that every player, as we heard from the captain of Solomon Islands there, wants to have that pathway into professional football. Obviously, that's a luxury that the clubs from Australia and New Zealand in the league don't have. They can't just pick and choose any player they wish from their specific countries. They've got competition, and many players also play overseas. So I think that's an automatic balancing act. So you're going to have less of a gap because of those specific circumstances. And over time, I think that the gap will also, if there is a gap, it will be reduced because we'll see that there'll be a heavy focus on how the island club's going to make sure that they can compete.
Let's talk about the fixture quickly. It's going to be a series circuit format from what I read. What does that mean?
Yeah, okay. So this is something which is fairly new to myself as well when I came in, but I understand it's something that's happened in rugby in the region where the matches are played in multiple locations. So in essence, we have six rounds of matches. The first five rounds of matches I would refer to as the regular season. So in those first five rounds, each team will play each other twice, the double round robin, a total of 14 matches. And in four locations, they'll be playing three matches. And in one location, they'll be playing two matches. And in the five rounds of matches, they'll be playing 14 total. Then based on the ranking, we go into the final round. Let's call it the grand finals series. And that will see the teams from the original, the regular season split into two groups of four. One group of leaders and playing each other one more time, so the top four, first, second, third, and fourth. And the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth place teams playing in the challengers group. They all play each other once, so three more matches for each of them, and that was quite important for us. We needed to make sure that all the teams played each other, had a minimum of 17 competitive matches during the course of the season. So for those two groups, after they've played their additional three matches against each other, the top three will from the leaders group automatically go into the semi-finals. And then the winner of the challenger group will play the fourth place team in the leaders group to determine who will be the final semi-finalists. And then there'll be two semi-finals, and the winners of those two will play in the grand final. And the winner of that will be the champion.
So it sounds like it's almost designed to be like a little bit of a festival atmosphere each round, I suppose. Is that sort of fair to say?
Yeah, that is through design. That's exactly what we want. We want this to be a celebration of the region, not just in terms of football, but in terms of the culture and arts and everything that's great about the region.
Yeah, and I imagine that probably saves in overhead costs as well.
That was one of the reasons for doing that. I think also, let's be realistic, we always knew that there were going to be new professional clubs in most of the countries. And it's a lot to expect from a new brand new club to have to host the matches themselves. So there was also that factor. We realised that the resources won't be there necessarily from day one for all of the clubs to be able to do that. So there was that element of cost, but also the practical side of being able to deliver as well.
You're listening to ABC Pacific Beat. I'm Kyle Evans, and I'm chatting with Stuart Larman, who is the competition manager of the new OFC Professional League. Very exciting competition. So we're going to keep this chat going just a little bit longer. Stuart, I wanted to talk about the PNG team, Hakata United, for one second, because the PNGFA president, John Caponato, has a long association with that club, and I know he's also a member of the OFC's executive committee. Was he involved in the process of awarding Hakata a licence, or did he have to declare a conflict of interest?
Yeah, all of the members had to declare any potential conflict of interest or any perceived conflict of interest, so that included presidents of federations where they were not involved with any of the clubs themselves. They obviously withdrew from that, or any kind of link between their federation and any other club involved in the process. So, yeah, everyone declared their any potential or perceived conflicts of interest, and they withdrew from the decision-making related to those specific countries.
And I know this is going to be a World Cup club qualifier, which is, yeah, I know that tournament's become a huge moneymaker in recent years. But what's going to happen to the existing qualification pathway, the OFC Club Championships? Will that still exist? And if so, is there a risk that it's going to be rendered meaningless?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, there's always been this gap, let's say, in terms of the need for a professional structure, professional league at the peak of the pyramid. So obviously, that's what the professional league is doing. But the heart of the football in the region remains with the amateur clubs in the different islands. That's where we'll see the feed into the national, into the different professional clubs that we're now seeing in the professional league. And the OFC Champions League will continue for those clubs to compete against each other, and will continue to be as competitive as ever.
And if the Wellington Phoenix do decide to pursue legal options, is there a risk that might delay the kickoff of the Pro League in January?
We're moving forward with the league, with all of the preparations. My day-to-day is very much focused on ensuring everything is in place for the 10th of January and for the remainder of the season.
And look, I'll just finish by asking you honestly, how hopeful are you that this will work? Because I think a lot of people really do want it to work, but at the same time, it's I think a few people are scared or perhaps a bit sceptical as well, just given the long-term costs that something like this, might cost. So, yeah, I mean, well, yeah, do you think it's going to be viable?
I'm not sure if you're aware. I've been involved now for on a full-time basis for just less than a year, and these concerns were raised when I first got involved at this kind of level, and so I came in with this in mind. But what I've seen during the application process, not just in terms of what we're doing here at the OFC, but also with the efforts that have been made by all of the clubs who applied, it's made me very confident that things are going to move in the right direction, because everyone is so dedicated and working so hard to make sure it does happen. So I've been really impressed by all of the clubs who are in the process about how much effort they put in. Some of them had to do major things working with local governments or national governments to change national laws, for example, to allow the professional players to be permitted in their countries. These kind of things, the level of effort just highlights to me how the willpower of everyone will make this work.
Well, look, it's certainly starting to take shape, and I can't wait for kickoff in January. That's all we've got time for today, Stuart, but thanks so much for joining us on Pacific Beat and sharing that information with us.
Thank you for your time. Thank you. All the best.
That was Stuart Larman, the competition manager for the new OFC Pro League, which will kick off in January next year.